Call the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is Friday, February 2nd at 1:34 p.m. Today we have present with us Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Colon, Representative Ortiz, Representative Kronk, Representative Kronk is not with us but has been excused. Representative Tomaszewski, Co-Chair Representative Edgman, Co-Chair Representative Foster, myself, Co-Chair Johnson. Today the committee will receive a continuation of yesterday's overview of the FY24 supplemental request by OMB Director Lacey Sanders, and then a presentation on extreme winter and event response by Deputy Commissioner Catherine Keith, Central Region Director Sean Holland, and Special Assistant to the Commissioner Andy Mills with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Our LOIO moderator today is Emily Mesh. Our committee secretary today is Bree Wiley. And here to present in the room today first, we have Lacey Sanders, director with the OMB. And if you would like to come forward, put yourself on the record and state your affiliation and proceed with your presentation. And as Lacey is coming forward, I see no immediate questions from the committee, so go ahead and start your presentation.
Thank you. So I, for the record, my name is Lacey Sanders. I am the Director of the Office of Management and Budget for the Office of the Governor, and I will be moving forward to where we left off yesterday on slide number 3, and I will move down the slide to Judiciary. Judiciary has a request of $240,000 in federal receipts to address additional grants increases that they anticipate through the remainder of fiscal year 2024. And that encompasses the entire $240,000. On the next line, we have state retirement system payments. We have an additional $375,000 to address the EPORS retirement system. This is the elected public officials retirement system. This is a closed system that has approximately nine nine enrolled in the retirement system, and there are nine beneficiaries, so for a total of 18 members within that system. When the state passed a 5% cost of living increase last year for partially exempt and exempt positions, it impacted this retirement system, resulting in a need for an additional $375,000 in this year. Under special appropriations, there is a total of $889,000 to adjust to address the judgments and settlements that have been brought forward by the Department of Law. These come in and are unexpected throughout the year. There may be additional items that we bring forward to the legislature as session progresses. The Department of Law is good about making sure that we receive those timely. Also within the operating budget, but not listed on the slide, are several items that we refer to as lapse extensions. These are items that were previously appropriated. For example, there are several items within the Department of Health for COVID funding that is still available and will be available in future years. So we put requests for extending the appropriations into the future as part of the supplemental package.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Ms. Sanders, can you give us a list of the settlements under the special appropriation that includes settlements, understanding that it's not a totality because I didn't see it in the backup?
Yes. Through the chair, Representative Hannon, it is on page My page numbers are different than yours. I apologize. It's row 91 of the backup spreadsheet that was provided to the committee. There are four judgments and settlements to the state that are listed in the backup.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, sir. Oh, 92 for you. I apologize. There was changes in formatting of spreadsheets. So line number 92.
Could I? So those are those part of then the capital versus the operating?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, no. The way the spreadsheet works is it follows the layout of the bill, the appropriation bill that's before you. So the initial items that were spoken to were operating. There are additional operating items that are in the language version or the language section of the bill, so they fall later on the spreadsheet.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Galvin? Oh, Representative Galvin followed by Representative Palm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question is around this particular, the special appropriations. Whenever I see the word special, it makes me think that it's hard to really define it or what other extras can you throw in there. But when I see it, it looks like it is just almost entirely Department of Law. So, but it doesn't, I just want to clarify, and I'm even seeing one of them, it's a looks like a case between our own Attorney General and our Ledge Affairs Agency. So it's confusing to me that we wouldn't put it into the pocket of law. So help me with that.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin. Specials is where we put items that we are not part of, like, for example, these costs would not be associated with the Department of Law's operating costs. So that's why there's nothing else listed right now under specials for this. And these are what we would consider one-time appropriations for a specific purpose. And just for reporting purposes, we try not to put it in an agency so that you can truly see what the operational costs are for an agency year to year. If we were to put any judgments and claims in the Department of Law's budgets, you would see spikes and in, increases.
Thank you. Yep. Representative Plum.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair. Ms. Sanders, can you kind of go back up to the education early development? It was a question I had yesterday and we ran out of time. That other, the decrement of 201.8, if I remember right, you said it was something that there was receipt authority attached to that, but can you kind of explain that number again?
Absolutely. Through the chair, Representative Colombs, when the Office of Management and Budget calculates salary adjustments, mm-hmm. we use the prior year's personal services to determine what funding sources are going to be used when we implement a salary adjustment for cost of living or for contractual negotiated contracts. So when that salary adjustment was calculated, it had interagency receipts, which require some type of revenue to pay for that interagency receipt. There was no revenue associated with that, so therefore a general fund replacement is being requested.
Okay. And follow-up, was the receipt, is that from another department? What was it originally?
Through the chair, Representative Colomb. So that would have come through the foundation formula for the Mount Edgecombe High School. Their interagency receipts come from a different section in the Department of Education and Early Development's budget. So the foundation formula uh-huh. calculates how much each school district will get. Uh-huh. Mount Edgecombe High School gets a portion of that, and that pays for the cost of a portion of the cost of running that school. That's a transfer of revenue.
Okay, so it, now there just wasn't enough this year?
Through the chair, correct.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
A question on the item. Let's see. I was looking at the settlements. Let's see if I can find the one. Oh, yeah. Item number 92, Taylor versus Legislative Affairs. Would you tell us what that is?
through the, or to the chair, Representative Johnson, I don't have details on each one of these items, so I am not the person to speak to what those entailed.
Okay. Guess we'll have to look into that. Just one second.
I can answer that question.
Okay, just, yeah. Okay.
I was
yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
Madam, if there have been a couple litigations, but I believe this is the litigation Fletch Council authorized when money had been vetoed. Legislative Affairs said if we did not have an enacted budget on July 1, that we would be able to continue to operate. Then there was litigation that said that was an undue authorization. If the budget hasn't been enacted, we can't. So it was predicated on a memo that Ledge Affairs sent out, and I'm trying to remember if that was 21, when we hadn't signed the budget. It was coming down to the wire, and that memo went out June 15th or so. And then there was, quote, friendly litigation to determine whether we had the authority to go forward.
Okay.
22.
So it's coming back, I believe it's coming back to me now. I'm just wondering if we are, did we start in this place that we just, I know you started with judiciary. I thought we were on public safety, so I don't know if we've made it all the way through public safety and what I would go ahead and do then is we'll start, finish up where, at the end there, and then we'll go back to if there's any questions on something or somebody doesn't feel like that we covered something, then we'll have an opportunity to go back. So, with that, is there anyone that had a question that I may not have seen? Was that Representative Ortiz? Yes.
More of a comment, but... Okay. Are you saying that, are we moving on? Before we move on to
Before we move on, and I mean, just to kind of clear the deck here on getting started, and then we'll have an opportunity to come back to it. But go ahead here.
More of a comment, and thank you, Madam Chair, through the Chair. More of a comment than a question. In relationship to some of the extensive discussions that we had yesterday around corrections, I went back and looked at the governor's submitted operating budget for 2015. And what it shows is that, year after year, the corrections budget grows, and to the point where from 2019 to 20, the proposed 2015 budget, I'm sorry, 2025 budget, sorry, to the 2025 budget, it shows an increase of 40% over that time period. And I'm not bemoaning the need for making those adjustments necessary so that the guards can have their raises, the inmates can have their proper medical attention. All those things are important things, no doubt about it. But it's just so striking because during that same time period between 2019 and 2025, while that budget grew 40%, education was a negative 2% from 2019 to 2025, negative 2%. That's just crazy in terms of where our priority should be. And I realize that's more of a comment, but I just had to make that comment. So thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. Now, I think maybe the decks are cleared. Thank you for that comment. And we're moving on to go ahead and turn back over to you, Lacey. Ms. Sanders.
Thank you. With that, I'm going to change the slide and move to capital. So starting with the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, yesterday we spoke about the $6 million for the acronym is in my mind, HPED, and I am blanking on what the full name is, but I'm gonna move past that one unless there are further questions. I know the Department of Commerce is following up on questions that were asked yesterday about that system. There is a 30 $8.5 million for a federal grant from the Department of Housing and Urban Development to respond to and mitigate the impacts of the September 2022 Typhoon Mirabok disaster in western Alaska. So that represents the majority of the federal funding that is reflected under the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Within the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, there is a fund source change of $375,000 from program receipts to general funds. In the budget that was passed for 2024 for a cybersecurity grant, the match portion was provided as general fund program receipts, which is not, there are no receipts to pay for that program, so therefore we're requesting a replacement of those receipts with unrestricted general funds. In addition, there is a $150,000 increase for a federal award that the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs receives to ensure that they can fully expend their federal award. And lastly, within the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, there is $3.3 million for the Alaska Marine Highway System annual maintenance and overhaul of vessels. This is coming from Marine Highway receipts and is addressing issues that were unanticipated, such as emergency repairs to the Testamina in October of 2023, installation of vehicle tie-down buttons that were required on the vessel Hubbard, and then the Kennecott was in an extended period of overhaul, which required additional funding to pay for those services. And with that, those were my high-level comments. Happy to take questions.
That was short and sweet compared to where it felt like we were going yesterday. do we have anyone that has any additional anything else that we would like to hear from our OMB director, Representative Stapp?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. My apologies if this was discussed. Line 96, I see kind of a curious supplemental retirement payment for a program called EPORS. So I don't know if members of the committee are like super aware of that. So through the chair to the OMB director, can you tell us what EPORS is or was and what are we doing?
Yes. Through the chair, Representative Stapp, EPORS stands for the Elected Public Officials Retirement System, which was a retirement system that was opened for a very limited time. It, at the time it opened, had 68 members that were in that system before it closed. Currently, there are 18 members or beneficiaries. It's split between, right now, there are 9 members and 9 beneficiaries that make up that system. Again, it's closed, so no additional members are being included into that system.
Follow-up, Madam Chair? Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Johnson, through the chair. So my recollection, and I can't remember if this is accurate or not, my recollection is this passed, basically it was a year for just the legislators and the governor. The voters actually repealed it the next year by ballot initiative, and we are still paying the retirement benefits for these 64 people and their survivors almost, I don't know, 50 years later. Is that accurate?
18. The other ones, I think.
Oh, 18. Sorry. These 18 people 50 years after the fact. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, seeing no additional questions, I do appreciate you coming back. And
constitutional
thank you very much. All right. We'll take just a brief at ease while we have our next presenter come forward. House Finance back on the record. Next, we have a presentation on extreme winter and event response by the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Here to present today, we have Andy Mills, Special Assistant to the Commissioner, and whoever else you would like to bring up, Mr. Mills, and introduce to us, please bring forward and go ahead and introduce them and put have the, everyone identify themselves, put their affiliations on the record, and then you can go ahead and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. For the record, Andy Mills, Special Assistant Legislative Liaison for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. At the table with me is Sean Holland, who is the Central Region Director, and I'll let the Deputy Commissioner introduce herself. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. Catherine Keith, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, and I'd like to introduce a couple of people that are also on the phone that will be joining with us for their subject matter expertise. We have Jason Sakalaskis and Kirk Warren. They are both their maintenance and operations chiefs in their respective regions, and that's Central Region and Northern Region. And then also we have Ryan Marlowe, who supports our avalanche and drone program out of Anchorage, and also Brad Bilsma, Director of Statewide Equipment Fleet. And in the audience here, we have Dom Pannone, Program Management and Administration, and then also Christopher Goines, Director of South Coast Region. So at this point, if you have any questions about the Department of Public Transportation and Public Facilities, please, we have the right people in the room to answer those questions. So we'd like to have the opportunity to speak a little bit about our winter weather operations, and there are a number of questions that the committee had put forth, including what are some of the frequency of our past events, our vacancies across our different maintenance districts, equipment, and also, you know, how are we mitigating some of these events that are happening and the frequency of those. So we'll start out by giving the opportunity for Mr. Andy Mills to speak a little bit about a snow summit that we recently held, and we can go on there through the slides. So there are a number of topics that we can touch on. Please let us know if there's some specific questions that you have on any of these. And I think the before he handed over to Mr. Mills, you know, there's been a tremendous number of events the department has dealt with, not just snow accumulation, but from landslides, avalanches, erosions. There's just a lot of things that our frontline staff are working with, and it's just an impressive group, and we're really proud of our team and proud of what we're doing out there every day. And they're more eager than ever to figure out how we can best serve the public, and this opportunity to speak with you all will be helpful in guiding our future discussions and learning how we can operate better. So thank you, Andy.
Mm-hmm. And again, for the record, Andy Mills. So I'll say up front, the reason you have so many of our team available to you is because winter operations really are a department-wide effort. And we wanted to bring our subject matter experts in a number of areas for winter operations to this conversation, both because you get to hear from them, and if you have very specific questions, we wanted to give specific answers. So the reason we're starting with the snow summit slide, and the reason I get to introduce it, is this was one very enjoyable effort during the interim that we put together. The snow summit was put together to, one, get stakeholders together from legislators who were invited, local stakeholders such as municipal and borough staff, MPO. There was quite a wide variety of folks invited, and it was so that we could get everyone in the same room to talk about one of the main functions of the department. The public, when they think of Alaska and they think of DOT, they think of snow clearing. Because that's one of the primary challenges we have. What do we call it? Two seasons in Alaska, winter and construction. Those are our two. And so this merited getting everyone in the room and really trying to discuss what it is we do, what it is that challenges us, and also the things we are doing to innovate beyond those challenges, or at least give people more tools to understand what's going on. So I don't think I need to read through all of this slide. For those who were unable to participate, we did stream it online. and those materials are available if you'd like to find them. But we did have, as you can see, folks from our M&O discussing operations and policies. We did have some guests from non-DOT entities, such as Fast Planning, talked about prioritizations specific to pedestrian and non-motorized facilities, because we know that sidewalk clearing doesn't need to be the exact same priority of snow removal as a road. That's a preference. Communities have said they would like to see more attention to what is cleared first, and it will not always be the same coupling. So Fast Planning had an excellent presentation as they're 2 years into that effort, and we certainly would like other localities to look at partnering with DOT on that effort. You can go down there and see, we talked about Complete Streets, which is an effort nationally, and in Alaska we're working on a policy that accounts for making sure our infrastructure and our maintenance cares for all users. And down you'll see other efforts here that will be represented on other slides in this presentation. But we were asked if this would be an annual event, if this was an inaugural, and we certainly are open to it, and it seemed quite popular. So it was very hard for us to narrow the field of conversation on this. You can see we packed a lot in. So I think it would warrant future conversations as, again, we work on innovations and hear about some of the challenges we continue to have, which, again, we'll touch on today.
And where was that held at?
Madam Chairwoman, that was held at the Atwood Building. So there's a free space at the bottom we were able to utilize. And again, fairly good attendance. It was, I think, 80 to 90. Some folks were in attendance throughout the day.
And have you thought about, I mean, I know you're just kind of in your beginning potentially, but I mean, have you thought about making a bit of a traveling presentation, because each area does have obviously a little bit different weather throughout the state anyway?
Madam Chairman, excellent suggestion. It was discussed, and I think that is a great example. We should have it around the state in different localities so that, again, attendance is easier for certain folks in certain regions. It'll change the nature of the conversation, certainly, mm-hmm. as well. And just so I also put a plug in, March 6th, we'll be sending out, I think later today, for our C Summit, which is an AMHS-specific summit. We found utility in bringing stakeholders together.
Madam Chair.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Through the chair, Mr. Mills, thank you. You have Fast Planning on here. So we are currently going through some EPA problems with air quality, and just wanted you to touch on real quick, are those decisions going to affect the funding for Fast Planning, the Fairbanks Area Surface and Transportation Committee, and is it going to be a problem for funding this year?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski, the current situation with our statewide transportation improvement program, as it relates to the MPO, that is Fast Planning, their ongoing planning funds have been programmed into what is their transportation improvement program, or their TIP. And because that has been programmed into their TIP already for the next 3 years, they'll continue to get the level of planning funds that they have received in the past. And there will be no change to those funds that have been provided to Fast Planning. In addition, projects in the area that are included into their TIP can keep moving forward despite the conformity freeze that is happening right now, which that does mean that we won't be able to add additional projects to that area, the zone that is the PM 2.5 area. We can't add new projects, but we are able to continue implementing the infrastructure program that they have in there.
Thank you.
And for the record, that was Catherine Keith.
Mm-hmm. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. My question is a new acronym in there. It's the DMIO, the Data Modernization and Innovation Office, and I'm wondering if that is brand new, if it's short-lived, where it's located, how many people are in it, when it came about.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Hannon. Data Modernization and Innovation is a division that we're very excited about the department. We launched it approximately 6 months ago. The current manager of the program is a division operations manager position, but we are transitioning this office into a department division over time. And we could bring up Director Panone to speak a little bit more through those details. There are a number of staff positions that now have reported into the DMIO office. They are not new positions. We are just locating individuals with that particular expertise, GIS, geospatial information, as well as programmers, individuals that have good skills with developing a visualization of existing data systems, individuals that do software that can help us with AASHTOware and broadening our use of that throughout the division. So we are not adding new positions, but we are finding better ways to support individuals that have skills with modernizing technology and putting them and giving them resources to help improve our operations as a state. And you'll see some of the dashboards that have been developed for winter operations and other things throughout the presentation because of the merging of their expertise on these topics.
Mm-hmm. Follow up. I just want to see if I understand it correctly. So if I could summarize so I understand correctly. There, it's not new staff positions, and it's not actually new things, but you're taking subject matter, technology expertise from various sections of the department and permanently located them in a new office that you guys have created.
Okay. Through the chair, Representative Hannon, yes, that is correct. The DMIO Director Christine Langley reports to me, and then within that we have a number of staff that work on DMIO data modernization initiatives.
Thank you. Representative.
Yeah, just thank you for being here today. This is an extremely important topic. I was just sitting here thinking, if you polled Alaskans today, what the number one topic would be for government, probably is snow plowing, right? The number one topic. And I really appreciate the snow summit and the focus on this issue. And I understand that the commissioner couldn't be here today, but what I would like to see, and maybe at this table and our table, our counterparts in the hallways, is a real strategic focus on how to start dealing with a department that's understaffed, that's dealing with severe climate change events, whether you call it, whatever you want to call it, it's here to stay, and just have a much more sort of focused effort, as I think you're going to lay out with the slides, on the cost of moving snow around. I think in my hometown of Dillingham, the amount of money that we spend on keeping our roads clear and keeping the airports clear and those vital transportation elements open and available, it's tremendous. But I'm going to close by saying that I hope we go through this discussion, get some kind of sense of that, because I like the idea of a snow summits and maybe it's landslide summits in Southeast and other sort of summits, if you will. But just the notion of moving snow, we spend so much time and money on it and deal with so much consternation from people who don't get their driveways or their roads plowed in time, even though we're trying to do as much as we can. But I'll close by just saying that I want to see some strategic sort of recommendations at some point from the department going forward.
Yes, thank you, Representative Edgeman, and I think we have I'll go ahead and turn it over back to you.
No problem. Again, and for the record, Andy Mills, and thank you for that. Again, there are many state departments that folks don't interact with daily, monthly, or even yearly, and driving on roads is something we all do very often, whether it's you walk, or you're on a bus, or you're in your own car, or bike, so absolutely. So again, moving on to slide 3 here, what we did want to illustrate in sort of following the Snow Summit conversation was, again, that Data Modernization and Innovation Office is working on several initiatives that we want to highlight for this presentation. The top is one that some of you may be familiar with, certainly your staff reach out to us very often about the road prioritization that DOT utilizes. Again, that was put in place several years ago now. to give the public an expectation of what order the roads would be maintained in, and generally how quickly some of that activity would happen. There is confusion on some of that because it's when the storm ends, not when the storm begins. Some people have asked why there's prioritization on certain roads. I believe it was 2022, there was legislative intent language that asked us to review a winter road priorities. We did do that, and last year we came back and discussed those. This map is in furtherance of that conversation, where we were switching that map into a dashboard and putting additional information with it. So I will highlight on this slide, again, that top map, there's lane miles associated with this. The current map is a simple GIS map that layers the colors on top so folks can see the road priorities. As you start putting additional data into this, why that's relevant is because you can look at the lane miles, and as there's adjustments, changes to those lane miles, that may trigger changes in prioritization. Maybe changes in the way that we are able to resource some of those. You can imagine that if you layer other information in here, this can become not just an information output tool for communicating, but a tool internally for us to use to review those road priorities and provide better information to the public that's associated with those, because it can be complex. In fact, a dynamic I've noticed is that people will ask, why is that a lower priority road? Let's take the Richardson for an example. Why is that a priority two? It should be a priority one. You have stations on there that's the road they're on first. We agree. It's a functional class versus what the actual the resources on the road are. So we're actually looking to make an adjustment to those roads to make the map priorities look more like what will be hit first. Try to maybe adjust that so that it is closer to reality and what the public expects, because in reality, that priority two is the first road that maintenance crew is on, and therefore it is treated as a priority one. So just the importance of this map to the public is very clear. We hear about it all the time. So we're looking to make improvements on that. If I move down, rather.
Question. Thank you, Chair, through the chairs. Thank you for being here. I know we've had many, many conversations about Anchorage. Snow removal. So the priority list, and I know I've brought this up before, my district is basically in the orange. Okay, so if you're a neighborhood that lives on the side of a hill and you know you're not till 3, it's going to be a while, correct? So two of my questions is, one is, how are the roads being prioritized? Like what are the factors that are giving a 1, 2, and 3? It was unclear last time when you guys were at the LIO in Anchorage. Never really got an answer to that. What is the determining factor? And is it just cars? Is it miles? Is it because my district cannot compare to traffic on, say, Tudor or, you know, the Seward, but we're all on an incline. So I was wondering if that factors into a higher priority. The second is just that there are so many priorities. I wondered, do you guys need more equipment or people so there's more green roads? Because the perception is the only really green roads in Anchorage are the Seward Highway and Glen. Those have to be cleared, right? So everybody goes, well, it keeps snowing and DOT is just doing the main highways, which you should. But I wondered if you could expand the green areas with equipment or people, or if there's another reason.
Through the chair, Representative Klum, thank you for the questions. I'll take the second one first, and that is why we're at the table having the conversation. I know we can make reference to the governor putting $915,000 in for supplemental snow removal, and that certainly is an effort by this administration to put more resources to that. I know that's likely not the end of the conversation, and that's, again, why we're here having this conversation. So as to your first question about what these road priorities represent or how they're determined, I'm happy to provide to your office or the entire committee the legislative intent report that we produced and presented on last year. It goes through quite a bit of that, including a survey that we ran asking folks, what are we leaving out? What are we not considering? And there are a lot of factors that go into this. It is primarily AADT, the average annual daily traffic, meaning average traffic volume. That has a large amount to do with it. However, I believe in your district in, on the hillside or down in South Anchorage, there are priority four roads that have a fairly high AADT. But they are also far enough from maintenance stations. They are sort of more local roads than they are interstate or major highways. So, and then on top of that are other factors such as emergency access near hospitals, school bus routes. The layers of information that sort of aggregate to the prioritization, it's a little complex, but there are many factors that are important. And so we hope to make that more transparent by having this map updated with other data sources so people can see that.
Okay. One thing I'll say about DOT and road plowing is I think as far as constituent interaction, it's probably just one down from the PFD. And no one ever says we don't have enough money put into snow plowing. Or I mean, a lot of times they say that. No one ever complained about putting too much into snow plowing. Anyway, I just wanted to say we do appreciate you being here, and there's certainly been plenty of extreme weather events, and we are in the midst of one, I guess, up north as far as cold and so on, but certainly down here as far as snow. And I think what I'll try to do is maybe take this first hour just to kind of like let everyone get a chance to, you can tell us, you know, some of doing your presentation and maybe get a chance for some of the committee members to really hit the high points from their districts as, you know, what they want to hear about. And then if you want to add, you know, if you have another half of your presentation that may be more finance related, then we'll take that towards the latter part of the discussion if that works. So with that, I think we have Representative Galvin, Representative Josephson, and then Representative Hannon are in the queue.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Thank you very much for being here. I appreciate that you probably feel like you're on the hot seat. We are all so anxious to help you do your work. And we're not experts, certainly. But I do have experience as an Alaskan, having lived in Anchorage forever. And as a child, I remember skating to school at one point. The winds were so bad and, you know, just terrible weather. But we still went to school. And I'm puzzled and kind of dealing with a lot of constituents who are frustrated because when their kids can't go to school, they can't work. And it's just become such a thing now. And it feels like it's beyond what we should call a winter emergency, because it, I don't know how many years it takes before we call it something we need to just be ready for. So I'd love for that to be part of this presentation. I can tell you that I heard from our own mayor, who's apparently working hard to work with you together. But he said you it's not smart to be ready for the worst case. And I'm just kind of trying to figure out what is worst case at this point, because when I hear that in Anchorage we are closing down our schools for 5 days because we already know it's going to take that long to clear, that is a real disaster. And that's a big concern of mine. And I also want to be cognizant that this is not all about Anchorage. I know that we have airports all over our state, hundreds of them that also need to be tended to, and I appreciate the vast work that you do. And so I guess my question is also how we can get local sources and resources to work with you when there are some difficult times, because maybe that's also part of this equation. I don't want to lose sight of that so that you can do your work statewide. That's so important as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Through the chair, again, Andy Mills, to Representative Galvin. I know two things I can mention. Later on, we do talk about some of that information, so I'll look forward to deferring to those slides as well. I will say anecdotally, from the Snow Summit, we did have some great feedback from connections that folks were making. that carried on after the snow summit, specifically from DOT and the municipality. No doubt those additional conversations and enhanced partnerships help when it comes to, oh yeah, I know I've got the latest number. I talked to him last week. I know we can reach out. I can get a hold of her when I need to. So those relationships are important, and partnerships stem from them. So anyway, we'll look to do more of that in future years.
Representative Galvin, I feel like you had a little bit more to your question. Did you want to add to it?
Well, to me, I may be echoing what we heard from co-chair Edgman about the strategy to make sure we're not in that place where we know it's going to be 5 days before kids can get to school again. There should be no number of inches of snow that gets us to 5 days loss of school. That is just, to me, not workable. And so if we could hear your strategy around that, I appreciate that it's beyond just schools, but to me that feels like a really critical canary in the coal mine that we're not functioning well if we can't get our kids to school.
And I want to add on to that. I know that, last number I heard was like a 40% rolling average absentee rate for MATSU in the best of times. And so when I think at this point, post-COVID, since we're fighting absenteeism in our schools, to add on the snow days, it's different than, when we just didn't, when that was the only time kids weren't coming to school, and it's additive. Anyway, with that, I'll let you go ahead and answer for Representative Galvin.
Very good. Again, through the chair, Representative Galvin, my apologies. I meant to say it perhaps more clearly. I think the answers to some of your questions about that strategy are in later slides. So I'm happy to either advance to those slides and we can tackle them, or wait till we get to that point.
I think I still have Representative Josephson, Representative Hann, and Representative Stapp. And those are the folks we have on the list. And I want to give everyone a chance to ask one question. I think everyone else has spoken except for our last three. So let's go ahead and let's see our last three folks speak first. Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For any of the folks on the panel here, I just want to get these numbers down properly in my mind. There is a transaction compare for the coming fiscal year that seeks $915,500. And I take it that this is for statewide contracted snow removal to improve service to the public. I take it that's to be spent next winter, essentially. So we have the 915, which looks like an increment. I don't know if it goes in the base. I'll have to check on that. And it notes that this is to enhance, essentially, the chances that priority 3 and 4 roadways, the ones Representative Colomb talked about, would move, would I think, more quickly get snow removal. But then in the supplemental budget that we just had a hearing and a half on, there's a request for $1.2 million. And so I guess it notes there's an unprecedented winter weather event. I mean, we've had 2 years of these now. I guess what I'm wondering is we're sort of smack dab in the middle of the winter. I think that's fair. We think we need $1.2 million to cover half a winter, but yet we're only seeking less than $1 million next winter. Can you explain what's going on there?
For the record, Dom Pannone, Director of Program Management and Administration. Through the chair, Representative Josephson. So to your first question, in the 25 budget, we're establishing a new component as part of our strategy to address and institutionalize this becoming more of a regular occurrence. We don't know where it's going to happen, but it is a new component in the base for $915,000. Part of that strategy is contracting resources, having those contracts established prior to the event. And as one of the representatives earlier said, when an event is ongoing, our trucks are cycling on the highways, on the priority ones. These funds will set a separate swim lane for the lower priority roads to be cycled on with contractor resources whose equipment may be able to handle those roads while our equipment handles the bigger roads. That's next year. In the current year, we did have an event that did cost us approximately $1.2 million in Central Region in Anchorage. Because we have the numbers for that cost, we're submitting a supplemental. It was an unanticipated cost, and we know what the cost is. In future years, if there's an event and we do know the cost, we can come back for a supplemental in that year too, and ask for it when we know the actual number, if it's above our budget. We're also requesting in the supplemental money for contracting priority 3 and 4s in Fairbanks, and then another capital supplemental to help with our emergency weather and response fund, which is a backup fund source for when we can't come for a supplemental. We have those monies in reserve so that we can address an event. And that is all part of our developing strategy to handle these recurring winter events.
Okay, follow up? I'll wait till later in the slide deck to talk about the interior region versus the central region. But I do get a little sense that that the 915 isn't enough, and that there's a little bit of prayer here that the coming winter, the 24-25 winter, will be better. And I don't know contractually if you have the graders you need, the staff you need, but I would shoot higher. I think the committee might. I haven't talked to the members, but they might be receptive to it. Are you downplaying the odds of yet another winter of heavy snow? Downplaying is not quite the tone I want. Are you diminishing?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, this is a new component and this is a new strategy. We do, this year we'll be carrying the balance of the emergency fund. So it's a starting point. It's a starting number for that new component. And that's the number we're starting with.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. And mine is not a question, but a statement. And I wanted to just share thanks, representing Juneau. We had some big snowfalls right at the beginning of the session. Many members of the body, somewhat jokingly, but I think in awe, said, wow, your city did incredible maintenance to get the roads clear. Our mayor made every attempt, and anytime someone that said that to us, it's one of those times where we go, well, a lot of our road maintenance here is done by the South Coast Maintenance Operation, and they did an incredible job of keeping up with it. I know that last night, you know, and just one of the side notes, I happen to live on North Douglas Highway. There was a large fire. I don't know if it was my imagination because the snowplows had gone through, but shortly after, all the fire crews had left, and I'm 4 hours down from that fire. A DOT crew came through, and in my imagination, they were coming to make sure that the ice on the road from the fire hoses was sanded before traffic, and the neighborhood really appreciated that. And the mayor has, at any point when those formal communications have given her city crew the kudos for it, she's attempted to share that much of it in Juneau is state operations. So thank you to the South Coast Maintenance for keeping up with the roads, and sorry there's more to do.
Representative Staff.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Through the chair, to our wonderful DOT folks, I feel like the member from Juneau kind of stole my thunder, because I was about to thank you guys for all the wonderful work you do with the Northern Region. And the really excellent job in Fairbanks, our town, especially right now under extreme weather conditions. Shout out to all the members of 71 and the different groups that kind of represent the DOT members. And we're always really appreciative in Fairbanks of the excellent work that you guys do. So thank you.
All right, carry on.
Again, for the record, Andy Mills, thank you very much, member, for the questions and those compliments. We will make sure to cut those clips and only those clips for our stuff. but we do appreciate those, because it can be
It could be often. In fact, I want a quote, a plaque, I believe, in Northern Region someone has, which is silence is your reward, or something to that effect. And praise is appreciated so for the hard work and long hours. For the finishing off this slide, at the bottom, you will see a dashboard. This is also fulfillment of an effort that we had promised as part of that, well, many promises. There, it was with the priority map review. It was with this innovation and modernization office, and we talked about it at the Snow Summit. Again, huge shout out to Christine Langley, who is leading that effort with her team. This is a winter operations dashboard. The intent is for the public to have the ability to see which roads have been cleared most recently, as close to real time as possible. That effort is to ensure that if you want to find out if your route to work has been cleared, you have the capability to see that. There are jurisdictions out there that are doing it, some more successful than others. Certainly, what we look to do with this is it's a pilot program right now. You can see the dot is in the Fairbanks area. It looked to expand it. We were very much hoping we might be able to have a beta out this winter season for folks to start using, but I believe right now the commitment is for next winter season for many areas to have the ability to utilize this. One real advantage that our team is working towards is integrating this information with other jurisdictions, municipalities, and boroughs so that one platform can draw from many data sources, because the public does not, they don't want to worry about the jurisdictional boundaries. They don't care whose roads they are. They want to see their route. So hopefully this will continue to grow as an effort to integrate more data so that the public can see where roads are being cleared and what efforts are being made. So again, transparency is a tool for folks to use to know what access is open. And I believe a heavy component of that would also be getting input from the public on what we're doing well with that tool and what could be improved. So, and I've already received input from one member of the legislative body that previewed this and another committee that was asking, what about airports? Rather than a NOTAM, could your airport clearing activities be on here? And certainly that's been conveyed to the team as well.
For the record, Catherine Keith. Thank you, Mr. Mills. With the chairwoman's permission, we do have Jason Sakalakis on the phone. Jason is our maintenance and operations chief and in Northern Region, so he'll appreciate Representative Stapp's compliments and convey those to his crew out there. Jason, are you on the line?
Yes, thank you, Catherine. For the record, Jason Sakalakis, Northern Region Maintenance and Operations Chief. We do appreciate the comments by the committee here today, and there's many maintenance chiefs on the line, and we'll make sure to forward those comments along to our guys, so thank you for that. In presenting what should be slide 4, without being able to visually see it, what we're looking at here today is really the overall basically state of Alaska and how we're broken up as maintenance and operations. With regards to what you're seeing here is, you're looking at each of our regions, which were broke into three different regions. We have Northern Region, which shows in blue, with 8 districts. That'll be important here in just a moment. Central Region, which is shown in yellow, which has 5 separate districts. And South Coast Region, which has 2 separate districts. We put a little fun fact up in the top left-hand corner with regards to some fun stats that we have, just showing some size of our district in comparison to the state of Florida. We have districts 1 to 2 times the size of the state of Florida. That's not a region, that's a district. So I think all of us are aware of the challenges that we have in Alaska with regards to, we'll say, mobilization, movement, and the importance of a strong transportation infrastructure. So with that, wanted to touch on our budget allocation process. When we move to the budget process, winter operations are primarily funded through our state operating budget. There's little investment from capital programs or federal funds just because of eligibility issues. With that, each region receives individual budgets. And then within the maintenance and operations, our regional component allocates budget to the district level. The one reason that this is extremely important is flexibility. You've heard a lot of challenges that we've presented today. We're already talking about them, whether it's avalanches, whether it's issues at airports and these kind of things. Having those allocations down to the district level, only allowing them to be able to move funds and resources around the districts is important. At the regional level, it allows us some flexibility to move within districts. And then you've heard some communications, and you'll hear some more in the presentation later about what we're doing with regards to discussions with, I guess, out there, leadership and headquarters staff to move resources and around, I guess I'll say, within even the regions themselves. With that, are there any questions on this slide? Hearing none, we can move to slide number 5. So here what we're reviewing today is looking at our snow removal priority system. One of the things we wanted to focus on, Andy presented a lot of public communications we've been doing with regards to our prioritization system and working on displaying this differently. One of the things that we need to maintain consistent on is actually consistent reporting and consistent information to the public. What you're showing here on this is we have a category 8 through B. These categories are primarily targets for roadway conditions. Like to make a special note, category D and E, which is very difficult, hazardous, is not one of our targets, but yet a condition that we need to look public to, so that's why it's on the list. Moving across the sheet, you see conditions and descriptions. The condition is what we report to the public throughout either an event or when we're recovering from an event. This is done through our 511 system, and definition or description is offered to the public and to our internal operators. The illustrations on the right are only offered to our operators, but the importance of this is to ensure that each operator or maintenance staff has the same expectation of rating the condition of the roadway, so that way when updates are published to the public, they're accurate, so that a long line driver doesn't experience different conditions or different reports. I'd also like to note that priority conditions can change on a roadway during an event. What I mean by that is just because you're on a priority roadway doesn't mean you'll always be in good driving condition. We may be in fair and difficult. We need to communicate that, and that's what we're doing. The after-event response or our targets are something that we want to achieve both during the storm and definitely after the storm. And you'll see the conditions move, obviously, from a fair to a good, potentially a good winter. Are there any questions on the slide?
I think that if you can go ahead and move through these fairly quickly so we can get to some of the more in-depth finance questions, perhaps.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you. Moving on to slide 6, I'd like to quickly go over and show our aviation system. On the previous slide, you saw our highways and how we communicate on those. One thing I'd like to bring to our attention that is over 82% of our communities rely on aviation as their primary access. We have 26 Part 139 airports and a total airports of 235. Another key thing that I pulled out from our staff was really looking at overall the amount of contractors we have working at our rural airport. Where we're not staffed or we don't have state staff, we rely on local contractors to perform this work. And at this time, we have over 128 contractors working for us across the state of Alaska working on our airport. As you can see, this is a large budgetary component, but a very important workforce to us. And the average contract for those is anywhere from $50,000 to $100,000 per airport for a spontaneous. Are there any questions on the slide presented?
Representative.
Yeah, just a quick statement that when I hear people say that, oh, inflation is really rising and you know, nationally it's 2.5%. And over a period of 3 years, it's been whatever number, 8 or 10%. When you look at the cost of delivering services and goods to Bush, Alaska, it rises and falls with very expensive aviation fuel, very expensive diesel, home heating fuel, the cost of fuel barges, this, that, and the other. So I just think that this slide illustrates very clearly how expensive it is for your department to do its business, obviously. That's the intent of the presentation. But also speaks to how everything, schools on down, are so expensive out in the bush. And this this slide just couldn't say it better for me, somebody who lives in the bush. Thank you.
Thank you.
Could we just save our...
And I'd like to end the presentation over, if there's any more questions, to Deputy Commissioner Keith.
Thank you, Jason. All right. We also have on the phone Brad Bilsma for our statewide equipment fleet. He's our division manager for our equipment. And as the committee members, you know, have mentioned, that's a key component of being able to keep not only our roadways open, but our airports as well. We have talked a little bit about our vacancies across the department, and perhaps Brad, with the chairwoman's permission, can go through these. He says he can talk quickly. Brad, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Keith, and thank you, Chair Johnson, for the opportunity. I believe we're on slide 7. I'm sorry, we're doing this a little bit blind. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes. Slide 7.
Okay. Thank you very much. The slide that you're seeing in front of you, and for the record, Brad Bilsma, equipment fleet manager for Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. The slide we're looking at here just outlines the number of equipment operator positions by district, the districts that that Jason was showing you earlier, and then the vacancy rate that we have in each specific district. We break this down further. Some of the more remote districts, Western District, the Tobe District, very spread out. And so while the 30% vacancy rates in some of those are, that is a very high vacancy rate. But when you break it down to a station that may only have 4 operator positions and there's only 2 of them filled, then it's a 50% vacancy rate. And it's very difficult to keep up with our standards for maintaining the roads and airports. So if we can go to the next slide, this slide 8, again, I am the director for the state equipment fleet. Our mission, our goal is to keep all state agencies in equipment and vehicles. So we service vehicles. This is a kind of a backup or behind the front lines section of DOT, and the state equipment fleet, we actually service all departments and do some work for the University of Alaska, the Alaska Housing Gas Line Authority, and agencies like that. But about 8,000 pieces of equipment, about 7,700 of them that we maintain across the state. We have about 51 manned shops across the state, 123 mechanic positions, and then another division behind the scenes for DOT is the Division of Facilities Services. About 800 public facilities that they manage, 700 of them are DOT facilities, and a facility could be an airport, it could be a building, could be any public facility. So from those 51 shops that have mechanic positions at them, we are servicing all of the road maintenance stations, all of the highway maintenance stations, as well as all of those 235 rural airports that were mentioned earlier. So very wide, broad area of of coverage for a very very active, a couple of very active and busy divisions behind the scenes. Any questions there, or we can go to the next slide. The next slide, you're going to see the vacancy rates for both the fleet and the facility services division. And again, this is shown by district, and we have some very high vacancy rates there. On the fleet side, what that means for us, the vacancy rates means that we have less staff, less personnel to go around to maintain equipment. During the winter, of course, our focus is on keeping snow removal equipment on the road and clearing the roads and opening the airports. The vacancy rates that we're experiencing, what that translates to is longer downtime for the equipment, which makes it more of a challenge for Highways and Aviation to keep their facilities and keep the roads and airports open and running. And if there's no questions there, I think I can turn it over to Central Region Director Holland.
Thanks, Brad. For the record, my name is Sean Holland. I'm the Central Region Director for DOT. Also for backup on the phone, I have Kirk Warren, who is Central Region's M&O Chief. I have four slides. I'll cover the November event, Anchorage-centered, although it did impact most of our region. I'll talk about how we responded to that event and lessons learned moving forward, what we're going to do in future years. And so I spent about 18 years at the DOT. I left for 3 years, and I came back. I've been in this position for almost 3 months. And point out that my first official day was November 7th, and then this event started on the 8th. So it was, I've been on the capital side, not the maintenance side, so it was really eye-opening to me to see just how the response to an event like this is orchestrated from the commissioner down. There's constant communication, and it was very impressive to me anyway. But so Anchorage-centered a little bit, but so in this event, you may have seen in the paper earlier this year, this week, that Anchorage has like 104 inches so far this year, which is a record pace. The records in 2011 and 2012 at 135 inches. The average is 76 inches. And for Juneau, I also noticed that heard on the radio this morning that January was a record snowfall for you as well. This November 23 event was the snowiest on record. We got that over 39 inches in a week, and significantly the storm had a high moisture content, and what that means is the snow is much heavier. We got, I think, 30 inches in that one the one storm, and once traffic hits that wet snow, it packs into ice or really hard snowpack, and that changes our operations from using high-speed trucks, which is more what we're geared for. We have high-speed equipment for our high-speed facilities to clear the roads quickly. We have some graders, but that's not really our specialty. It's a much slower operation. But we had to switch to those graders sooner because the trucks weren't able to cut through that snowpack. Again, graders go much slower, but also in this case, scraping the roads took a lot longer. Anecdotally, our crew says that this snow from this event took twice as long to clear as our typical snow type. Our maintenance shops in Palmer, Anchorage, and Soldotna are manned essentially 24/7. On paper, there's about 3 hours a day that they aren't manned, but certainly if weather is forecast, then all personnel are on alert so that we can respond. The urban snow removal, as in Anchorage, again, another learning experience for me is that there's no room to push the snow. You need to pick it up almost as you go so that you can make room for all that traffic and you can clear the roads. And in Anchorage, we only have one snow dump. And I'll touch on that a little bit later, but it's significant. So I think to Representative Josephson's point, the hard question for us is this becoming the new norm? Last year in Anchorage, we were almost record. This year, we're on pace to beat that record. So we're geared up for more towards that average snow year, that 70 inches. We're a solution-based organization, so we need to figure out how we can better respond to these extraordinary years, these extraordinary events, and provide resources for our crews to be able to respond to them better. And next slide, yeah, please. So up here, there's a list of our equipment in our Anchorage shops. And it's high maintenance equipment, just to show you, like, you know, how much effort goes into our fleet. During this storm, the sidewalk blowers, they went through more shear pins than they typically go through in a whole season. If you're not familiar with what a shear pin is, it's a pin that goes into the mechanics that creates a weak point so that if the mechanics are overstressed, it will break on that pin rather than damage the rest of the machine. And it's one of the simpler maintenance items that we do, but two things. It does take time. It does stop the operation and significantly slows the production. Plowing's hard on the trucks. You know, as you if you own a plow truck, you know that snow in the air gets into the engine compartment, turns to water, can cause electrical issues. You can't, particularly with that 30 inches of snow, you're not going to be able to see curb lines or other obstructions, and that can break plows. We've had even broken frames because we hit things so hard. That also can damage the infrastructure that we have, whether you're knocking a curb off those large snow blowers that we have. If the operator makes a mistake and hits, say, a traffic signal, it can knock it right off the cable. So I guess my point is that it's a skilled position. Our operators need, I think it average what I told is, what I've been told is it takes about 3 years for an operator to develop the skills to be an effective snow removal operator. Again, to demonstrate, you know, how high maintenance these items are, I'll give you a snapshot in time, and I guess this is the day before yesterday. We have 48 operator positions, 39 of those are filled in Anchorage. Six of those are seasonal employees. Plow trucks, we have 13. Day before yesterday, six of those were operational. Seven of them needed work to go back on the road. Graders, we have 9. 5 of those were operational. All of our loaders were up. We have 4 highway blowers. 2 of those were operational. And of our 4 sidewalk blowers, only 1 of those was operational. So in addition to our forces, for the first time this year in Central Region, we've created some on-call contracts. Fairbanks did this. I don't know if they started last year, but they've had those in place. We set them in place this year for Anchorage. Next year, we're probably going to do it for the MATSU. In those on-call contracts, we have sidewalk blowers. And again, I guess towards the maintenance, by the end of this event, our contractors' sidewalk blowers were all down, so they were plowing sidewalks with pickup trucks. The cost of those blowers through that contract is $175 an hour. We also have graders for plowing the priority in 3 and 4 roads. The hourly cost for those is $195 to $250 an hour, and that's based on regional costs. Eagle River is a little bit longer for them to travel, so that's on the more expensive end. We have snow haul price a contract. Those run at $180 an hour for a side dump. I guess I want to talk about change management. This is the first year that we've had those contracts, but it's essential for us to maintain our core crew. You know, we aren't going to use contractors to replace the crews that we have now. We have that core expertise, and we need to keep that in place to be successful. For this emergency response, I can run through some bullet items that we relied on to respond to it. I think we can switch. The first bullet is we partnered with the other regions. Northern Region provided an additional highway blower for us to help clear that snow in Anchorage so that we could haul it off. And they also plowed further down the Glen and the parks to allow Central Region equipment to focus more on the urban areas, Wasilla and Palmer in this case. We're also partners with the city. You know, we have an excellent relationship with the city on an operational level. With the city maintenance group, and we help each other where we can. And in my view, we do this in every community, is that we need to work as a team to better serve the public.
We have a TORA in place, which is a transfer of responsibility agreement with the city of Anchorage. And this kind of memorializes road maintenance swaps. So the DOT will plow some of the city's city-owned roads, and likewise the city will plow some of DOT-owned roads. This is based on two things, is that the city is more geared up. They have 30 graders, so they're more geared up to plow neighborhoods. And where I mentioned before, the DOT is more geared up for the high-speed facilities. So we trade roads based on that. And then also regional. So it doesn't make a lot of sense for a plow truck, a state plow truck, to plow a state road, pick up their plow as they're driving across a city-owned road, and put it down again when they hit another state road. So the agreement kind of takes that into account as well. In the case of this event, the mayor and the commissioner capitalized on that relationship to develop an emergency memorandum of agreement so the state could reimburse for assistance on the road that were not in that TORA. And this helped the city snow removal too. You know, if they can't haul efficiently across our priority two or three roads, then it's going to slow down their response to the neighborhoods. And I don't mean to downplay it, but it wasn't a significant cost for us. It was 135 man hours spread out over 20 employees over 2 days, so partial shifts. And the bill was $30,500 in that ballpark.
We do have a couple questions here, so I want to pause and make sure that since we're talking about Anchorage and a couple things have been, you know, kind of in the news, let's go ahead and let the Anchorage folks get a chance to weigh in and ask some questions. And then where I might ask you to do so, because I think the presentation is maybe longer than we have time for, we certainly want to talk about the funding, which is on page 19. So anyway, we'll take these questions and then we'll think about how we're going to get through the rest of the presentation. Thanks. All right, Representative Josephson. Representative Galvin, and sure, why not?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Welcome back to State Search. So I was reviewing an article that got a lot of exposure called The Absurd Ownership Mishmash, and on December 2nd, and you've talked about that, not so much its absurdity, but just that it is a mishmash. I'm curious why... the state central division has 1,100, really, I think it's just the Anchorage area, has 1,187 lane miles and only 9 graders. And Fairbanks has, according to this article, just 72 lane miles. And I'm trying to see its number of graders. It's at least comparable. I'm just trying to see if the department is underserving Anchorage based on its capital requirements and demands.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I'm not sure that those numbers are accurate. 72 seems really low, but maybe I'll say that we're geared up for an average year, I would say, and with our equipment spread. I'm not sure if that answers your question or not, but
follow up. What I'm reading is that the Fairbanks area has 28 miles on the Elliott and 44 on the Steese. And maybe I'm missing something there. But I guess what I'm wondering is the fact that you needed to contract with the city might suggest that 9 graders isn't enough. So should we just be having a capital allocation for more graders?
And through the chair, Representative Josephson, I would say for this event that 9 graders was not enough. Again, I think the strategy should be that the state force is geared up for an average event, an average year, and we can use contracting for resource leveling, if you will. So if we need additional forces, we have those contractors available to fill in.
One more follow-up.
Yeah, I'm told from an Anchorage senator that the contracting hasn't gone all that well, and that contractors have reported that they're tapped out. They have generous contracts that they don't want to divert their attention from. Is there anything to that anecdotal comment that I heard from an Anchorage senator?
Again, through the chair, Representative Josephson, we could have a long conversation about that. Yeah, we had for our contracts in Anchorage, I believe we only had one contractor respond. We're only gonna hire one contractor, but I believe we only had one. We didn't have a huge response to that, but workforce, you know, you can see that we have a 19% vacancy rate in our operators. I have contractors in my office weekly for other reasons, but that's a common point of our conversation is workforce. They have the same challenges that we do with operators and mechanics. So it's across the board. And, you know, you would think that in Alaska, most of our construction work besides the slope happens in the summer. So there would be those people available to work in the winter. I guess we haven't seen that recently anyway.
Workforce challenges too. Thank you.
And Catherine Keith, for the record, just as a brief follow-up through the chair to Representative Josephson, sorry. We have had some conversations with the Anchorage City Mayor as well on this topic, and one of the challenges was that the department just hasn't contracted out snow removal like this before, so this is a relatively new thing for us. There were challenges, especially at this recent event, that a lot of the contractors that would have equipment that could support with snow removal didn't have the equipment ready yet, the things weren't changed over, and the equipment needed for the priority threes and fours would be different than some of what they had at the time. So we do hope that working over the next year that we can kind of continue that dialogue with the contractors and get support for these contracts, and then also work with them just to help with the equipment selection needed for some of the priority three and fours so that we can do an adequate job there with the priorities one and two and the threes and fours simultaneously to help, especially with the school openings that Representative Galvin had mentioned. And so while I believe those are all accurate statements, as this was just a new effort for the department, we do expect that moving forward that we'll have greater engagement from the contracting community on these bids.
Great. Next up, we have Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson, and I really appreciate what I'm hearing, especially the idea that you, in the future, things are going to look different. You've got some ideas and some plans, and that matters a lot to me as I answer to constituents who are really pulling their hair out and businesses who are absolutely devastated because of the lack of work output. So thank you for that. My question is really geared around our vacancy and what we are calling average year. So let's start first with the average year piece. I guess I'm going to pair it with a question. Typically, we take maybe the last 10 years, and then we will average it out, and that's our average year. I wonder if we're speaking with climatologists and others, or you know, maybe not climatologists, so that's probably a bad word in this building, but to understand the pace of change that may or may not be happening, but seems to be at this point, so that we can call our average year truly an average year. I'm concerned that we might have a different definition of that. And I think it matters as we're considering things like 7 out of 13 of our average year plow trucks are no longer operational right now, or 20, 26, 29% vacancy rates in various departments. That concerns me. I assume that these vacancy rates are based on 100% being for an average year. And your plan to fix your average, your above average year is contractors. So, A, let's make sure that we've got our average year, whatever that is, and let's make sure we define that well, is fully staffed, and how can we help you with that? I know that the Department of Law, for example, Representative Josephson had some ideas. He put it into play, and by golly, now they're the lowest vacancy rate. So let's talk about that. Is it wages? Is it benefits? Is it changing up their hours? Is it that we need to grow a bigger pipeline? Do we need to do more in apprenticeships and things like that? I am so game, and I didn't see any of that in here, so that's why I'm bringing it up. Secondly, I think that we hit on it mostly. It's the operation pieces. So we've got vacancy, and then we've got average. What do we have? If it's 2 out of 4 of our snowblowers, that's 50% not working. More than 50% of our plow trucks. And I know the answer is contractors, but if I'm hearing only one major contractor in Anchorage, when we think about things like natural gas and any kind of energy source, we have to have multiple lines of assurance to make sure that we don't deliver the essential piece of energy. And I'm going to argue that I call our roads and all of the important work you do essential. So I look forward to more and more discussions and getting into the numbers, as you mentioned, I think, Chair, page 19, so that we can be sure to have those deep discussions how we can help. Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, just Catherine Keith for the record, I just want to say thank you. But, like, yes, all of those items that you mentioned, those are all things that need to be pursued and that the department is pursuing. It's a, as everyone that's here to talk on this topic can attest to, very, very complicated, and one in the sense that, you know, one factor changes or there's a vacancy in a maintenance shop in one of our districts, it has a compounding impact. And so we do need to care for all of these things, especially with some of the uncertainties that a lot of the areas may be facing in upcoming months. And we just want to be sure that we are doing what we can and providing us with other options, which is what this line item does for us as contract, gives us an option for contracts if we need those and when we need those. And one of the challenges is if we're using them as a one-off solution, it makes it hard for businesses to rely on that as a business model for them. So we do need to institutionalize in some way our use of these mechanisms while also balancing, you know, maintaining a healthy staff ourselves. And so thankfully there's plenty of snow to go around, so we do believe there's plenty of work in that regard. And we can talk to those things in the budget slides.
Thank you very much, Representative Flom.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair, if I could follow up a little bit to what Representative Josephson was referencing. These mechanic positions, Anchorage 19, Fairbanks 18, the number of plows, the number of, look at most of these numbers. I guess I'm frustrated that there's no, so Anchorage is 8 times larger than Fairbanks in population. Now, space-wise, maybe not, I don't know. We're the largest city in the state. I'm frustrated that in my impression is that DOT gives no weight to that. The economic loss, the amount of kids not going to school. When Juneau shuts down, it's a certain amount of people. When Anchorage shuts down, it's a lot more people. And so I'm frustrated that it's obviously the resources are not being given to Anchorage like they need to be given. In my opinion, the equipment would be, I guess I was hoping you'd come up here and say, we need more equipment, and that we could fight for that so you guys would have the equipment. It's hard for me to really believe that 9 graders is enough on an average snow. I don't know. I'm not an expert. But the contractors is something that, you know, my district got particularly hit hard with that. The contracts were up on the hillside, and it was a miserable failure. People got hurt. Couldn't get emergency vehicles through. It's just not acceptable. I hope you can make the contracts work. My impression, or my opinion, which take it or leave it, is that I wish we had more equipment on contract drivers. The people that have equipment, to what was spoken to before, they already have really good contracts, a lot less pressure in a lot smaller areas. So if they want a contract with DOT, they're probably not going to be making as much money. And so I would be open to, and it's not just Anchorage, whatever area of the state, if we're not keeping up, I think you've heard many, many times, not just from Anchorage, but from a lot of legislators, just tell us what you need so we can figure that out, so we can help you do your job and be prepared for the roads you got to plow, whether it's Anchorage or Juneau or wherever. I mean, this what happened this winter, last winter was terrible too, but this winter particularly was really, really bad. And I know, well, I'll just speak for myself. I spent weeks and weeks dealing with constituents about this. My district, the main avenues of the district are DOT, and then I have the Muni in between, and both completely failed South Anchorage. So I'm just looking for, I guess goes back, what's the strategy? Is contracts really realistic? Is that really going to work? Because I know it was the first year, it was a major hiccup, but I don't think we can really afford to do the same thing if it's not going to work. So I'm just asking you to really think. There's a lot of people that want to partner with you and get what you need to make this happen. And I hope that Anchorage, at least the consideration of the number of people in that city and how many children and people, handicapped people walking down the middle of the road because the sidewalks aren't done. It's a lot of people in Anchorage, and it's very, very dangerous. So whatever we can do, please reach out, especially when it has something to do with capital. Thanks.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Coulomb, thank you for those comments. It sounds that with the Data Modernization and Innovation Office, one of the tasks that they're working on, to Representative Galvin's point, was about like modeling and being able to forecast the impacts to an area like Anchorage if the snow level is the new normal. And that is certainly something that we can do and provide some feedback to the committee on if that is the normal snow levels in upcoming years, you know, what would it take to equipment-wise and staffing in order to manage that? And, you know, those are numbers that we can come up with. So we're not guessing or saying that, you know, emptily that we'll be able to handle it, but we can come up with those tools, and that's partly some of the benefits of having that information in a digital format, like the GIS systems that we have prepared. So we are continuing to, you know, pursue multiple avenues to addressing these to be sure that we can clear the streets and the roads across the Anchorage area in collaboration with the city. But we'll have to continue to work through those with the regional director. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to ask if we couldn't, if we can get to page. We only have 15 minutes left, and we haven't gotten to the page where you're talking about funding. So we really need to go ahead and move forward to page 19. And if we could hit the high points on what you would like for us to have a takeaway here in the next 15 minutes.
For the record, Dom Pannone, Director of Program Management and Administration at DOT. So as we present to the appropriating body today, we want to talk about what is in the governor's budget being proposed, and then talk about all of the events that, you know, in retrospect, that we've been dealing with over the last couple of years. So first, to one of the strategies that we started implementing, it says fiscal year 2021. That was a supplemental. What we started doing was looking through past capital appropriations for little amounts of dollars left over of state funds where the capital project had been completed, the objective accomplished, but there was remaining funds on the appropriation. And then we proposed that the legislature reappropriate back to DOT for this extreme weather and catastrophic event appropriation. So those are the three that we've received so far. The total in retrospect that we've received is $13 million approximately, and we've spent approximately $10 million addressing these extreme weather events.
I just want to ask you a question then. As I thought I remembered in 2022, it would have been the fall of 2022, the snow came early like it did this year in South Central, and that there was a $5 million emergency appropriation for additional snow removal, maybe I'm remembering incorrectly, but I was wondering if any of that money was left over. And I know we certainly have an early South Central snowfall this year. So I don't know if this supplemental, the ones that you were able to find and add to, if that, where that's helped or where you're at really right now with the current snow year.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Our current amounts available that we have available to spend to address weather events is $3 million. We're requesting a supplemental for the current year of $1.2 million. That was the Central Region supplemental on a previous slide. Mm-hmm. Without that supplemental, we would dip into these funds to pay for that event and then have less in reserve to address emergency weather events. We're also asking to increase this reserve as we've reached back and found about a dozen projects going back to, I think, 2004, largely totaling $344,000. About $300,000 came from a Jones Stub Road project that had been completed. So we're asking to reappropriate those funds to increase the available amount in reserve. And then we have a supplemental request for Fairbanks area winter contracts of $350,000. That's for the current year supplemental funding. And then again, for the 2025, it's our first year with this statewide component. It would be added to the base state funds, statewide contracting and snow removal of $915,000 of UGF. At the bottom here, we have some weather data that kind of gives context for the events that we've seen across the state and comparing back in history to when the last time those levels were seen. And then on the right of the slide, we have history for the last 2 years of all the what we would consider extreme weather events that DOT's addressed.
Madam Chairman, this is Catherine Keith for the record. So this ends our budget slides. Would you like us to continue with the presentation or hold for questions?
Okay, well, do you have any other additional questions? Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. And at the risk of annoying my chair, I would like to just request some information that had to do with your vacancy rates on page 7 and 9. Over the last couple of years, we've had some authorizations for mission critical pay, shift differential pay incentives, variety of letters of agreement. I'm not sure if that's capturing all the terms and directives, but I'd like to see that in relation to these vacancies. For one, I see on one of the Dalton Highway where that under mechanics where there's 0% vacancy, and I'd like to see if we see any pattern of correlation between letters of agreement that gave them shift differential or mission critical pay incentives, if that's being effective when we get back to the budget in the long term.
Again, Representative Benjamin.
Yes, thank you for the presentation today. I think it was certainly well sort of put together, well timed, well delivered, and hopefully if we have another one of these soon, we'll have the commissioner on board, because I think we sort of lack that element, the big broader view that a commissioner can bring. And that's not to speak or diminish anything that was presented to us today, but as I sit here and sort of cogitate on this presentation from somebody far away from Anchorage, but who travels through Anchorage quite a bit, and who resides here in Juneau at the moment during session, it just feels like this issue is systemic in nature, and I'm not getting that sense from you all as much as you're trying you know, the new division, the supplemental monies and things like that. You know, I think about what the department does. We're in highway system. You do airports. You do roads. You do maintenance. You do planning. You do engineering. You do feasibility analysis. You do public communications. You do maintenance. You do equipment replacement. Just a whole host of things. Now, because of climate events, extreme weather events, you've got this issue maybe working its way to the top of this Maslow's hierarchy for you all. And it just sits here. It just feels, as I sit here as a policymaker, you don't have enough personnel. Contractors are tapped out. This problem is going to get, if these weather patterns continue, it's going to get more pronounced as time goes on. And I feel like something's missing here in terms of talking about this problem in a much bigger context than just supplemental appropriations and sort of, you know, shuffling the decks on the chairs of the department a little bit. And you know, I don't know, Madam Chair, I think the, you know, the presentation today was very appropriate. But if at some point we have this larger discussion, because it just feels like, you know, We've got this big issue with schools and bonuses for teachers and this, that, and the other in front of the legislature, but we don't. Those snowplow drivers, you know, I've laid in my hotel room in Anchorage at 3 o'clock in the morning and they're not working. Do they get, you know, how many guys and gals do you have out there that can do this? You know, and like the gentleman was saying, these are skilled positions. You know, they're not ordinary positions. I can't jump in a grader and just be out there doing this in my spare time, although I've been tempted. But it just feels like we need a larger discussion at some point. I'd like to, you know, maybe when the commissioner gets back into Juneau, have that sort of back and forth. Thanks. Madam Co-Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Edgman and Representative Josephson.
Just a comment. This has been very helpful. But I'm left feeling like this department, and frankly, the other departments too, are somehow instructed to provide OMB with the lowest possible number you can survive with. Because I look at this and 915,000 is just not enough. You don't have enough equipment. You don't have enough manpower. And I know you can't just pay people more, that there are rules that prohibit that, without some executive order or some extreme circumstance, like some of the things Representative Hannon mentioned. Meanwhile, we wait for these salary studies and all the rest. This department's difficulty hiring truck drivers is sort of notorious, I think, in this building. And I would rather, even from, frankly, a political standpoint, just rather inundate you with resources. And if you don't need them all, great. They'll lapse. We'll all be very happy about that. But I think someone up the chain of command needs to go to OMB and say, this just isn't good. The public isn't going to tolerate this. And just be more ambitious. We would welcome that. I think the majority of us would welcome that. It's not a criticism. I know you're doing what you can, but that's what I want. Speaking for the 18,000 I represent. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. And I'm going to see if do you have any closing comments as we finish up here.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Catherine Keith for the record. And thank you for the comments from the committee members. We wanted to share with you some specific examples about the Central Region incident in Anchorage with the heavy snow and conversation about the larger workforce and capital requests with equipment. Conversation would be more than welcome. We absolutely have tremendous number of things going on for workforce development, training, recruitment, retention issues across the department where we are very actively pursuing ways to fill the gaps. And we just thought that wasn't the topic of conversation today. So we would love to have the opportunity as Commissioner Anderson come back and talk through some of those things with this committee. And you know, meanwhile, we'll follow up on some of the information requests from the committee on these topics and, you know, look forward to furthering the conversation. So thank you for the opportunity to speak and, present. So thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. And let's see. Our next meeting is Monday, February 15th at 1:30 p.m. The committee will be receiving a presentation on state debt by the Department of Revenue. And seeing no further business before the committee at 3:26, we are adjourned.